Hello, folks. Thanks for tuning into the Vigilance Press podcast again. Got a podcast here that was originally recorded before Christmas with Marvel Comics writer Dan Abnett. Unfortunately, we had some technical difficulties with the laptop it was recorded on, and we just now got it restored and posted. In this interview, Mr. Abnett talks about his work on Heroes for Hire, The Annihilators, various other Marvel projects, and the Ultramarines movie. So apologies, Mr. Abnett, for not getting this up before Christmas, but unfortunately it's unavoidable. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in, and enjoy the podcast. Hey, everyone. This is the Vigilance Press podcast. Thanks for tuning in. I'm here once again with regular guest Dan Abnett. How are you doing this morning, Dan?
I'm doing fine. Thank you very much, Mike.
I guess it's afternoon there on English time.
It is, actually, yes.
let's start with right in front of me. I've got the webpage for Ultramarines, which is the Warhammer 40K Space Marines movie, and that has launched to DVD already, right?
It has, yes. It's because it's such a niche. It's a large market, but it's a niche market. They thought they would produce this special collector's edition set. I think there will be a cinematic release in the new year, but the point is it's going directly, delivered directly to the door of the 40K fan. So very exciting. I'm hoping to get my copy on Monday.
Nice. So that's Ultramarines, themovie.com, if you're looking for a Christmas present, perhaps, for the Warhammer fan in your life.
Absolutely, yes. It's the first time they've done a movie at all. This franchise has been around for, knocking on for 30 years. This is the first time they've turned it into a movie. It's animated. It's a very, very great animation with face capture for the expressions of the actors. The cast is amazing. John Hurt, Sean Pertwee, Terrence Stamp.
Oh, wow.
Just an amazing voice actors who recorded it, and it's just good. It absolutely does what it says on the tin. It's Space Marines in action. It's sort of an ideal introduction to somebody who's not familiar with to 40K, but also a cracking romp if you're a fan of Space Marines and you've played 40K on the table. So yes, great. And the collector's set, he said, plugging away shamelessly. But the collector's set, they put it in a lovely metal box, and they put a graphic novel in there that I've written, which is the prequel to the movie.
Nice.
So there's sort of setup information in there as well.
Excellent. You know, I was talking to my local comic book store about you yesterday, Heroes and Dragons, in name of the place in Colorado Springs. The guy was kind of a fan of yours because they actually sell a lot of Warhammer 40K novels, and he regarded you as the best guy writing those right now.
Well, that's very nice of him to say so. Thank you very much.
Also, he wanted me to needle you about what's happening with Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, at the moment, for our cosmic fix, you're going to need to go to Annihilators and Rocket and Groot. I think that's where things are going to be for a little while. We loved Guardians, but obviously from the storyline that you've been able to see over the last few months in Thanos Imperative, and as it will be the epilogue for which is Thanos Imperative Devastation, which comes out in January, things have moved on a bit. I'm not saying we'll never go back to Guardians now, but the epic scale of the cosmic stuff has moved on to a new place. So I'm hopefully that will supply him with his fix of cosmic.
Okay, yeah, I mentioned to him that there was the character's name just eluded me just a second ago, but the tree and the Rocket Raccoon.
Oh, Rocket Crew, yeah.
That's coming out in January, right?
That is now. Well, the thing, the Annihilators and Rocket and Groot will be one big comic. There'll be this four-issue limited series that will be both series sort of double wrapped. Mm-hmm. In one lovely edition, which is I don't think Marvel's done that before, but it will be a slightly higher cover price. But for the slightly higher cover price, you're getting two whole comics. And it's a great sort of cosmic grab bag, because on the one hand you've got the ultra high level heroes in Annihilators, the most powerful guys in the universe, pretty much a team that could take on the Avengers and win quite easily. And on the other hand, you've got Rocket and Groot, who are, you know, sort of scurrying around in the corners of the cosmic universe, having adventures by the skin of their teeth. So the package covers both ends of the scale.
So this is kind of a two-fisted. Or a double punch of cosmic action, and this is March 2011 we're looking at?
They thought it. I guess this is the way that marketing works at the moment, that somebody's looked at it and gone, wait a minute, these are complementary. They both run out of Thanos in terms of their continuity. They're both direct consequences of where Thanos Devastation leaves things, why not put them together and see if people like that? And so I think it's going to be great value for money. You know, just that I've been seeing, I'm waiting to see the first few pages of Annihilators come in. I'm sure it's going to look great. But I've seen quite a lot of what Tim Green's doing on Rocket and Groot, and it's just awesome. I mean, it's worth it just for what he's doing on the art. It's just amazing. Very seldom do you see a comic book artwork which makes you laugh through characterization of body language without even the dialogue in place.
And it's
cracking stuff.
Nice. Do we have any ideas of page count and price point on that book?
I don't know what the price point is. I know it's going to be something in the order of 42, 43 pages of comic strip, though. So, okay. So that's pretty good going.
Okay, now just to refresh anyone who maybe wasn't following Thanos Imperative, the Annihilators, well, they weren't called that then, but it was kind of, some people were jokingly calling them the Cosmic Avengers. We had
The Cosmic Avengers is the name that I think even Marvel used. We seriously considered calling them that, to be honest. The reason we didn't, well, there are two reasons. One is it would have required a section of the story to explain why they would, as it were, inherit the franchise or the franchise name. There would have needed to be some kind of explanation of why something so Earth-centric needed to be cosmic, and it's not easily explained by the lineup, because with the exception of Quasar, everybody else is an alien, and we therefore wouldn't necessarily have the same attachment to the name. Also, the Avengers is a big, definite franchise, and there would be a blurring of the edges, I think, if we called our book that, whereas it's meant to be the flagship cosmic book. And Annihilation is such a closely connected to, as a cosmic brand, we thought the Annihilators also seemed to sum up the sheer scale of power being wielded by these guys. So there is a standing joke, as you say, that it's kind of the Cosmic Avengers. When they were first unveiled, you referred to them, they were a team thrown together by Nova in Thanos Imperative just to deliver one big desperate strike mission. Now they are slightly more formally constituted. In fact, they like the Guardians of their predecessors, have a conversation about names and what they should be called and what they shouldn't be called. So, you know, I think it's a very happy compromise between the various possibilities.
Okay, can you give us the lineup real fast? Obviously, we have Quasar and Silver Surfer on there.
Quasar and Silver Surfer, absolutely. Beta Ray Bill, Gladiator from the X-Books, from the Imperial Guard, and Ronan the Accuser from the Kree. So five incredibly powerful guys. I mean, when you consider that, I guess if you were really trying to sort of line them up side by side, Ronan would be the least powerful member of the team. We're talking about an absolutely astonishing power set there. And we're not to say that that's not necessarily a static lineup, in as much as this is sort of the anti-Guardians. This is very much the idea that Star-Lord had the right idea. You needed a team on call ready to defend the universe. He simply essentially had to make do with the Misfits and Mavericks he had at his disposal and were willing to believe in his message. Many of them gave their lives saving the universe. And now people have wised up to the idea that he was on the money and this was needed. So the sort of A-listers that he always would have wanted to have there, just in terms of clout, have agreed that should the situation need it, they will group together and be a sort of first responders to the to any big crisis, Thanos style crisis that would come up in future. So they're not a permanent. There's not an Annihilator's mansion or an Annihilator's cave or an Annihilator's watchtower or anything like that. They're not a permanently established team. But thanks to the wonders of interdimensional teleportation, should the need arise, they get the call, they deploy.
Yeah, I guess it'd be awkward if they were the Avengers, because that would mean Jarvis would have to have at least one panel somewhere in the miniseries.
Absolutely, yes, he absolutely would. Yeah.
Let me ask you: can you tease us anything about the plotline of Annihilators, or is that still under wraps?
I think we've mentioned that the big threat that they're called together to deal with first of all is going to be the Dire Wraiths, the return of the Dire Wraiths.
Oh, from Rom, yeah,
and. Yeah, absolutely, and very successfully in the X-Men. They've actually appeared more in the X-Men than you might think. They potentially very, very creepy race with some extremely interesting connections to Marvel continuity, and they were sort of banished forever. And not only is their return a very, very big deal, But the just in terms of getting around the continuity of it and making it happen, the nature of their return makes it a very, very big deal in terms of what has to happen in order to bring them back. So it's sort of a very baptism of fire moment for the Annihilators, having agreed in principle that they should be available to an emergency call. They suddenly get something that that warrants their assembly. He says, using the word advisedly. Well, and I can say, before you ask the question, ROM's not in it.
ROM can't be in there.
We can't use ROM because he is technically a copyright that's not owned by Marvel, but Space Knights obviously will play a part of this story.
That was my question. Okay. Well, hey, let me follow that up with the current miniseries we have out right now. I just read issue number 2 yesterday, actually, Iron Man and Thor.
Yeah.
Where they're battling the High Evolutionary.
They are indeed, amongst others.
Yeah, you seem to be having a good time with that.
Great fun, yeah. It was really nice when we were asked to do that. For a start, working with two terrifically famous characters. I mean, absolute sort of marquee names there in terms of the heroes. And indeed the villains, really. Ralph Macchio, the editor, just said he wanted something sort of old school and traditional and sort of massive in scale, sort of cosmic in scale, what we've been doing, but in the remit of Thor and Iron Man. Scott Eaton is a wonderful artist and is just, I think, just producing marvelous stuff.
Oh, it's a beautiful book, yeah.
It really, really does look gorgeous. And one of the great things is the pages were coming in. They were coming in really fast. I mean, astonishingly fast considering the quality. But also, every time I'd write a page description or a panel description, I think, gosh, I'm asking a little bit here, but I hope he's into it enough to want to deliver. Just thinking that if he's enjoying drawing the story, he will just put that sort of extra 10% in, even if it's a little bit of an ask. And the pages were coming back with a sort of voluntary extra 25%. You know what I mean? He would do the little bit extra that I was hoping he'd do, and then go. He was digging it so much, he just put loads of other things in there and take it to the next level. So it's great. It's really terrific.
Yeah, having read the first two issues, I can definitely validate everything you're saying because it's looking amazing. And speaking of amazing-looking books, Heroes for Hire just came out, a week or two ago.
Yes, it did indeed, yes.
And are you tired of all the comparisons to Birds of Prey yet?
That's going to be inevitable. I mean, you do anything street-level in a comic universe, be it Marvel or DC, and you have a handler character who's orchestrating other characters, there is going to be a comparison there. I think you'll find pretty rapidly that there are major differences, just in terms of the meta story and stuff that we're playing around with Heroes for Hire. There's, we're really not trying to do a Marvel version of the DC book. We're trying to do something else that just happens to have a couple of points in common in terms of its genesis. But it's looking another book that's looking great. I mean, Brad's just awesome.
Oh, yeah,
really, really good stuff.
No, I would agree. Just most of the reviews I saw online mentioned either Gail Simone's name or, you know, Birds of Prey somewhere in the copy, and I was like, it's not all that similar, but okay.
Gail and I, Andy and I have a sort of a long-standing joke with Gail that there was a period, particularly in the late 90s and early part of this decade, where we would either get the gigs that she was going for or she'd end up getting the gigs that we were going for. In fact, it became a standing joke because there were three or four in a row where she actually apologized because she landed something that we'd been in the frame for, and then vice versa. So there's nothing deliberate at all, but I think it's wildly ironic that at this point we're doing a book for Marvel and the comparison is with Gail. So, and very flattering as well. I think she's fantastic.
Oh, she does amazing work. I love Secret Six.
Yes.
It's occasionally very disturbing, but I really enjoy it. Well, Moonlight showing up in Heroes for Hire, and he's kind of one of those quirky Marvel characters who, he's just kind of weird. I mean, sort of Batman, but I've always had a great affinity for the character, especially the older 70s stuff. But can I ask you how you're approaching the character, what your take on him going to be?
At the moment, it's we're having great fun with the book as a whole, because as you understand from the remit of the story, it's a team that isn't a team.
Yeah, yeah.
There is the handler figure of Control who is orchestrating where everybody is deployed to, and as you'll see in the second issue, she has sort of one semi-permanent backup guy who is the kind of caretaker who makes sure everything works on the field.
Talking about Paladin, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And everybody else is a hero for hire, using the sense of hire as in
taxicab.
Yeah. Oh, no, more particularly that they get called in because of their abilities, their mission-specific abilities. And in return for their cooperation, they get whatever it is they need. So if they are literally a mercenary character, they get paid. But they might get an exchange of information, or they might simply get called in because, like Moon Knight or Falcon, they believe in what's going on and want to help. But they are, you know, so they're not higher in the old sense of the strictly mercenary thing going on. As such, therefore, we're getting to play with some great characters. I mean, we've got in the first two issues alone, we've had Moon Knight, we've had Black Widow, Falcon, Elektra. In the second issue, we've got Silver Sable and Ghost Rider.
That's pretty cool.
Very cool things going on. And then cause some of these characters, they're not one shots either, in as much as some of these characters will return and do a second tour or a third tour or be a regular, whereas others will be sort of one off. That we've got some one off surprises. People will turn up for very mission specific things that I can't believe they've got that guy in there. So Moon Knight is very, very interesting indeed, because he falls into the, resentful category. He doesn't want to be part of a team. He certainly doesn't want to be a mercenary. He doesn't want to do any of those things. But he will do it if what he's getting back is the information he needs to pursue his very particular personal remit. He's probably the hardest nosed, well, not counting Ghost Rider, obviously, but yeah. He's the hardest nosed character that they have had to deal with so far. And that's great fun. I mean, I think he's a very human character. I'm interested that you're fond of him, because I am too. He's got all the steely ruthlessness of a character like Batman, but there is a very human heart in there. It's not, you know, there is a fallibility that I think is very interesting. So yeah, he's good fun to write.
Yeah, a little more human in some ways than Batman, but
yeah, absolutely, yes.
I'm sure I'll get some hate mail for saying that, but yeah.
No, I think in a good way. I mean, Batman, I think he's very human, and the most human thing about Batman is that he's absolutely resolved to do this and never waver. Whereas Moon Knight, I think he's sometimes prone to doubts, and that gives him. Otherwise, he would be a Batman in a white costume, you know, really. And I think that was what makes him interesting and you know, valid in his own right.
Well, hey, getting ready to wrap up. Anything else we want to talk about before we call it a day here?
No, I think you've covered everything. We're very, very nicely busy. We have just been announced on taking over from Paul Cornell on Soldier Zero for the Stanley's.
Oh yeah, that's
from Boom. So we're going to be working busily on that very soon.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that. Are you working with Stan at all on that, or just getting notes from him?
Yes, we're taking over on issue 5, and that's just you know, a hugely fun thing to do. It's a good, great concept. It's a great book, and to work with Stan is just a lovely thing to do. So
I interviewed Stan about 10 years ago, and he's got the most personal charisma and energy of any person I've ever talked to.
Yes,
he's
absolutely fantastic. So that's great.
Great. Well, hey Dan, really appreciate your time. I know you're very busy. I like it whenever you can take a few minutes out to talk to us. And you still there?
Absolute pleasure. Thank you for talking.
All right. Well, hey, thanks a lot, Dan, and have a good day.
Thank you very much, Mike. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.